15. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. The gray sand stretched in every direction beyond the mountains, as far as the eye could see. It rose up in great dunes patterned in windy waves and plummeted into deep valleys. To the Skyer folk, it resembled the sea they'd so often watched from their stone perches, a dark, unforgiving, roiling thing, and yet uncomfortably, unnaturally still. There were no plants or animals anywhere to be seen. The farther they walked from the mountain and stone towers of the borderlands, the more agitated everyone became. They'd never spent a day of their lives without clinging to a tall spire, and it was disorienting to be mired in shifting sand, each step sinking and sliding. There were no landmarks, no clear goals, no place to hide. Brendel and his troops somehow seemed more stolid, traversing the desert as if comfortable there, and it happened that Gosta grew brave, or perhaps terrified enough, to ask them about it.
"We've visited planets all over the galaxy," Brendel said, not slowing in his slog forward, although his lack of athletic conditioning kept him breathing heavily. "Desert planets, water planets, ice planets, and ruined planets like yours, with all sorts of topographies and environments. Every environment has its own unique mercies and horrors. Even in the harshest conditions like these..."
He looked around, and although no one could see him frown through his wrappings, it was clear he was uneasy.
"You're never as alone as you think you are."
"But if we don't find water soon, we'll be in trouble, won't we?"
the girl asked.
"We'll continue," Phasma said, her voice hard. "We move forward. We'll find what we need or we won't. But we'll get there."
Her words made the Skyer folk nervous. What did Phasma have planned, and why was she suddenly so very determined? They'd seen her fight against all odds and take great risks for her people, but the way she marched through the sand without pause struck them as almost suicidal. Carr was the last one in line, and as the day wore on, it became apparent that he was slowing down. Siv fell back with him to inquire about his health, but he just shook his head.
"I feel dizzy and feverish," he said, "and not in the good way."
"The fever?"
He gave a sad laugh, a pathetic echo of his usual good humor.
"When your skin feels like it's on fire, and your skull feels like it's going to burst, one fever is the same as the next, I suppose."
When she pulled up his mask and put a hand to his forehead, he was almost cold. There was a strange color mottling his usually tan face, a worrisome paleness. She could see a blue vein just under the skin of his temple beating rapidly with his heart.
"Phasma, come look at this,"
Siv called, and Phasma left Torben and Brendel to lead the pack as she hurried to the end of the line.
"What's wrong?"
"Carr feels lightheaded and hot, but his skin is cold."
Phasma lifted her own mask for a better look and frowned at what she saw.
"Show me your wound from earlier."
When Carr slipped off his glove, they were surprised to see that the beetle's wound was nearly gone. It had been swollen, red, and hard right after the bite, but it appeared to be healing nicely, leaving just a light pink rash around the pinprick puncture wound. Phasma put her hand to his forehead and checked the whites of his eyes, but in the end, she only shook her head.
"We must keep walking. Let me know if anything changes. If this is an infection, it's different from the dangers we face in our territory. It's not the fever, at least. Stay vigilant. Apply more salve. And put your mask on. If you're contagious, we need to take precautions."
"I'll try not to kiss anyone,"
Carr murmured. Still he obeyed, drawing on a second set of stripes with Siv's salve and pulling down his mask, as Siv did hers. Phasma jogged to the head of the line, and everyone continued walking. The Skyer folk could hear Phasma consulting with Brendel in a hushed voice, and they thought they heard talk of his promised medicines. That was good, then. Their leader was making plans to help their injured friend. They were a close-knit folk, and they would all pitch in to make sure Carr reached Brendel's ship, even if they had to take turns carrying him. They walked all afternoon, stopping once in the shade at a dune to nibble jerky and take careful sips from their water skins. Phasma had distributed multiple skins to each person, taken from the stores of the Nautilus, but Siv ran the numbers and instantly knew it wasn't enough to get them to Brendel's ship. This far from their territory and without a living plant or creature in sight, water would be an increasing worry. At home, they had other ways of collecting enough to drink, and although there was rarely more than they needed, they'd never prepared for a spell as dry as this one. Collecting and filtering urine was a regular part of life, but they would eventually run out of that too. The Skyr folk didn't speak their worries out loud, though. Phasma would take care of them. They had to believe that. The desert heated up with the afternoon sun beating down, and although they were tempted to lift up their masks and tug off their wraps to let the wind cool their sweating skin, they knew better. Keeping covered was always a better option. Any slice of exposed flesh would quickly burn and possibly blister without a thick coating of salve. The sun was not as kind as it had once been. When Siv looked back, she saw Carr lagging even farther behind, his mask up on his head. His cheeks were swollen and pale, his eyes bulging somewhat, his lips dry and puffy.
"I know," he said, catching her watching him. "I look terribly handsome."
"You need to rest."
"I can rest later. Help me up the hill."
Siv hurried to his side and helped drag him up the next dune, feeling him wobble against her as if he'd lost his once solid sense of balance. It would be days yet before they reached Brendel's ship, and Carr would slow down the entire group if he didn't shake off this new sickness. When they crested the dune, they were dismayed to find it was the first in a series of high hills straining into the horizon like a sea of gigantic waves. The wind was high along the top, and they jogged down each hill into the cool of the valley before slogging up the next hill. Time stretched out strangely then, Siv told me, as they constantly struggled up and down but didn't seem to go anywhere, didn't make any visible progress. It was like battling the same enemy again and again, never gaining a foothold. All too much like their old life in the Skyr, truth be told. Any wonder at the new world was lost to dread and discomfort, plus worry for Carr. The muscles used for walking in sand proved very different from those used for climbing and leaping among rocks. Their arms still ached from clambering down the cliff face. It was, in many ways, an unexpected hell for a people forged in the crucible of struggle. I've seen these dunes, and I can't imagine what kind of mindset it would take to tackle them without simply lying down to die in a valley. We grow so accustomed to our speeders, our ships, our hyperdrives. To be in a world where only your feet can move you, centimeter by centimeter through infinity? Let's just say there's a reason Phasma wanted off that rock. The sun was setting as they tumbled down a dune into the valley below, cold with shadow and whispering with eerie wind. Carr was the last one down, and he slid like dead weight, landing on his back at Siv's feet. "We'll camp here tonight," Phasma said. "Keep covered. Recycle bodily fluids. Every drop counts. Be careful with your supplies. Sleeping close will conserve body heat." She sighed heavily and added, "It's going to be difficult, but I won't hear any complaints." Her warriors nodded listlessly, and the troopers looked to Brendel, who added,
"Phasma is correct. Conserve your resources."
They sat in smaller groups to eat, the Skyr warriors together and Phasma sitting beside Brendel with his troops. The three armored soldiers took off their helmets for the first time, and Siv was oddly fascinated to see that they were just people like any others, their hair shorn close to their heads and their skin sweaty and red. One of them was a woman, although it was only perceptible through her facial structure, and she had her hair cropped the same as the men. Her armor showed no difference in physiognomy, and Siv recalled being pleased that among the First Order, women were considered equals and warriors. Her mother had told her stories, you see, of a different world in which women were considered somehow weaker or lesser. Perhaps that prejudice had died off as it was determined that the women of the Skyre could climb better than the men and began to outnumber them among the warriors. At that time, however, sitting in the dune's shadow with these strange folk from beyond the stars, Siv considered what it would be like to wear the shining white armor herself, to be faceless and mighty and one of countless others fighting for a worthy cause. Were her people bothered that their leader sat with the strangers instead of among her own folk? A little, but they also understood that Brendel Hux was a powerful commander in his own right, and that leaders often spent time together making plans for the betterment of the people. They still had trouble understanding Brendel sometimes, thanks to his sharp accent and some odd changes to his vocabulary. If anything, Siv said they felt some pride that a woman of the Skyre would be considered the equal of a wealthy, powerful general who commanded starships. As for Carr, he was growing listless, staring off into space and swaying a little as he sat. He refused the jerky Siv offered him and nibbled only at some dried sea vegetable, gulping down his allotted sips of water. He had no bodily waste to add to the recycling unit, though, which was the sort of thing that was noticed when water was scarcer than usual. He was the first one asleep, falling to the ground in a puff of gray sand and snoring gently through swollen lips. There was nothing they could do for him. This was a new ailment, and their only hope was that it would go away on its own, or be easily fixed by the medical equipment Brendel promised was waiting on his ship. The next morning, Carr was even worse. His flesh was swollen and pale, all the blue veins of his body visible and throbbing near the skin. He reminded Siv of the creatures that sometimes washed up from the deep sea, ghostly white and partially transparent, gasping for breath and crushed by the very air. His gloves were too tight on his swollen hands and nearly had to be cut off with a knife. When asked how he felt, he couldn't speak. His tongue and lips were too swollen. He could only shake his head. But the surprise and fear Siv expected to see in his eyes wasn't there. He seemed sleepy and resigned. They pulled him to standing, and Torben helped her propel him up the next dune, Siv's every muscle burning as the injured man wobbled between them. As Phasma crested the dune's ridge, she was lit by the rising sun, half molten gold and half indigo shadow. She put up her hand to shield her eyes and screamed, "Enemies! Skyre! Fight!" as she clutched her spear and reached for the axe hanging on her belt. Siv and Torben had no choice but to drop Carr in the sand and run to Phasma's side, drawing their own weapons. The troopers pulled their blasters and began firing down the dune, and as Siv hit the top with Torben on her heels, she saw the attack unfolding. Figures swathed in gray seemed to glide across the sand, pulled by huge lizards with pebbled gray skin. They skimmed over the ground far faster than the Skyre group could run, and they held long, shivering lances tipped with glassy blades. Siv considered her blow darts, but she couldn't find skin on the attackers and didn't want to risk wasting the metal barbs. Instead, she pulled out her two curved scythes. The attackers were close now, six of them dragged by six lizards. A trooper's blast sent one of the lizards flailing down the dune, his master tumbling behind him. The five remaining skimmers didn't swerve. Phasma was closest, and she sidestepped the lizard's lunge and swiped her dagger across the folds of its neck, slicing deep into muscle and making the creature scream. The skimmer behind it was able to nimbly leap off a flat piece of metal and run at Phasma on overlarge feet, and their silent fight drew everyone's eye until the next skimmer glided near. It got past the troopers, but Torben was running right for it. He slammed his club into the lizard's skull, darted around it, and hacked into the skimmer's chest with his axe. The figure fell down, and Torben put a huge boot on its gut, ripped out his axe, and yelled his battle cry, splattered in blood just as red as his own. So these attackers were human, then? Probably. For all their strange costumes, they could die, and that emboldened the Skyre folk. Gold beetles erupted from the sand to lick up the blood, and Torben staggered back, hunting his next prey.
Siv let out her own ululating scream and ran down the dune toward one of the skimmers, ready to do her duty for her people. The lizard dodged sideways, great mouth open to show hundreds of serrated teeth. Siv skidded to her back and slid along the sand, slicing up the creature's belly as she zipped underneath it and rammed her feet into the legs of the enemy pulled behind it. The figure fell over with an all-too-human curse. Before Siv could stand and continue fighting, little Gosta leaped over her, brandishing her blade and stabbed down in a vital spot while shouting her war cry. That skimmer didn't get up again. Gosta held out a hand to help Siv stand, and when she looked around, she saw that the Skyr warriors and their trooper guests had utterly destroyed the attackers and their lizards. The fight had been unusually quick and brutal. No enemies were left breathing, which meant no answers would be had. Where had these attackers come from? What did they want? Had their people traced the path of Brendel's ship across the sky, and were they too racing there to claim the bounty? It couldn't be helped. At least the Skyr folk had won. Well, that wasn't too bad, Siv said with a smile, but she didn't get to enjoy the victory for long. Quick! The Detraxas! Phasma barked. Siv hurried to the lizard she'd just gutted, pulling the first Detraxer from her bag and jamming the spike deep into the creature's muscle. Considering the bloodthirsty beetles already scurrying into the bleeding cavity, she had to be quick. As soon as it was working, she went to the figure Gosta had just felled. Although she recognized that time was of the essence, she had to see who would be providing the life-giving essence for the salve that would protect the Skyr warriors on their journey. To Siv, this wasn't just a physical act. It was a ritual. Tugging at the wrappings on the figure's face, she didn't know what she would find. An alien species? A mutated human? Something native to Parnassus that they'd never seen wash up on the rocks? But it was a human like any other. A young woman, just like her. Medium brown skin, hair long and plaited under her wrappings. Clean and healthy. No visible signs of trauma or disease. Even the woman's teeth were intact. Siv closed the woman's brown eyes and said the quick prayer the Skyr folk always said when they harvested minerals and liquids from a body. Thank you for giving me life. Your today protects my people's tomorrow. Body to body, dust to dust. Before Phasma could bark at her again, she jammed the next Detraxer into the meat of the woman's thigh and set it running. The Skyr folk and the troopers had taken no damage, and it was deemed a great victory. The nutrients and water skins they'd claim from their assailants would save their lives and possibly help nourish Carr back from whatever trauma he was suffering. Siv collected her first Detraxer from the now desiccated lizard, traded the full skin for an empty one, and jammed the machine into the next lizard. As both machines did their work, she joined the others in hunting among the human bodies for spoils and bags of water. They were careful to scrape the beetles away, crushing the pernicious things when necessary and never letting them get anywhere close to their skin. Each of their attackers carried pouches that hung over each hip, and although the Skyr folk didn't recognize everything within the pouches, they took them and grew determined to understand how to live in this arid place. The most valuable thing found in each pouch was a dried cake of densely packed minerals and salts that reminded Siv a little of the Detraxer's rich essence. The sleds the skimmers had ridden would be a great boon, allowing them to drag their packs effortlessly over the sand instead of carrying the weight, now increased by several skins of water. The lizards were an especially rich resource, and Gosta was already slicing off strips of their dried meat for the road.
Oh, we can pull Carr,
Siv said, suddenly remembering that she and Torben had been forced to drop their fellow warrior to rush to their leader's side during the fight. Torben nodded and followed her back down the other side of the dune, dragging a sled behind him on its rope. Carr was just a dark lump at the bottom of the valley, fallen on his side, his breath ragged and troubled, and his heartbeat swiftly fluttering.
Carr, are you worse?
Siv asked. A low groan was the only answer.
Flip him over,
Torben gently turned Carr over so that he was facing up and helped him to sit. Carr seemed twice the size he'd once been, his body swollen and his flesh thin and pale and stretched. Siv reached for his bare hand to hold it and found that his fingernails were gone. They'd popped off and fallen to the sand.
"Stay with us, old friend,"
Torben said, so gentle despite his size and might.
"We'll drag you behind us. We'll be your own personal sled lizards, and then Brendel Hux will fix you and take you up into the stars."
Carr moaned again and tried to close his eyes, but the lids wouldn't slide down over his bulging orbs.
"Hurry!"
Phasma called from the top of the dune. "The Detraxos are full and ready to be moved, and we need to leave before someone comes looking for these people." Torben nodded to Siv, who pulled the sled closer. Carr shuddered and groaned, and Siv stopped tugging on the sled to focus on him. He was quivering, shaking all over, his eyes wide open and his lips and swollen tongue struggling to speak.
"What is it?" Siv asked.
In response, Carr rolled his eyes toward her and shuddered. His skin trembled, too swollen to touch. He gave one last moan and exploded in a cloud of water. It was as if his skin had dissolved and liquid splattered Siv and Torben and sank into the sand, coloring it a deep black. There wasn't much blood, and his organs appeared to be shriveled, dark things connected by pale blue tubes and nearly translucent bones. As Siv stood and stepped back, watching in horror, the ground around Carr's clothes erupted in beetles bursting out of their cones of sand and licking at the water with their long proboscises.
"Up! Get away!"
she shouted at Torben, who was frozen in shock and grief. The big man stood and stumbled back as yet more of the bright beetles, hundreds upon thousands of them, ripped out of the sand to gorge upon the water that had been their friend and fellow warrior. Beetles sucked on his shrunken organs and tried to scuttle up Siv's legs to lap at the liquid soaking her pants, but she knocked them off and ran a few steps farther back.
"Both of you, come away!"
Siv and Torben looked up to find Phasma at the top of the dune, haloed in morning light as she watched them, axe and spear still in hand. Brendel stood by her side, his head canted curiously as he watched the horror unfold.
"But Carr,"
Siv said.
"He's gone now. He can't be reclaimed. He can't nourish his people. Now it's up to us. We must prepare what we can and go."
"At least he's in no more pain,"
Brendel added, but his words sounded hollow and cloying. He hadn't lost any of his people, and Siv suspected that if he had, he wouldn't have mourned them. Never had Skyr folk died without in turn nourishing their people. Even those who fell into the ocean were thought to feed the creatures there, and those creatures eventually died and washed up on the rocks, where the Skyr would use them for clothes, food, and moisture. But Carr was simply gone. There was no prayer to say over him that worked.
"Thank you for being you,"
Siv said, standing over bones wrapped in wet clothes and covered in frantic, vicious beetles.
"Yes, thank you,"
Torben added, before putting a hand on her shoulder and gently urging her up the dune.
"Carr was a good friend and a fine warrior."
For all the hills they'd climbed in the desert, that one was the hardest. When they finally struggled to the top, Siv saw that Phasma had moved some steps farther away and was squatting with Brendel in hushed conversation.
"This one's done,"
Gosta said, gesturing to the second lizard, which was now no more than a loose skeleton wrapped in leathery hide and dry as the air itself. The Detraxer was full and purring, and Siv knelt to switch out the skin and place the siphon in the next lizard. As she worked, she described every step for Gosta, showing her how the pieces of the Detraxer fit together and how they had to be cleaned. No one else among them knew how to work the machines or concoct the salve, and she had to pass this knowledge on.
It was dangerous here among the dark sands, and Siv might be the next to fall to some unknown terror. With no child yet to pass on her knowledge, as her mother had passed it on to her, she would teach Gosta all that she knew. That was all they had in the Skyre. One another. And hope.